You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This is episode 151 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, National Thoroughbred Racing Association Equine Discounts, and Equestrian Plus. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse. Brought to you in cooperation with the Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
On today's show, we touch base with our Making the Makeover rider, Sam Fawcett, on assessing potential in a makeover horse. And we chat with New Vocations for a training tip and introduce you to our adoptable horse of the week. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you are listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Kristen, like, I don't know about you, but I am a total houseplant, and I'm getting all of my photosynthesis with the warm weather. It has been life-changing, although I did get a cold. But besides that, it's been great.
Oh, the spring cold is so sad.
It's like you thought you made it, especially I didn't get sick at all over winter. When everyone else was battling plagues, I was surviving. And I was like, I made it. Lulz.
Yeah, lulz. You got equine affair plague or something.
And the best part is I feel like no one else got it. It was just my special present.
Yeah, lucky you. And like we were together the whole time. Like we shared a hotel, like literally 24/7 for like, what, 48 hours?
Yeah.
And I escaped. So,
and I'm happy for you. And honestly, mine wouldn't be too bad if I wasn't pregnant. So, as I mentioned to you in our little pre-show, I imagine this is what a man's cold feels like. So for our male listeners, I apologize, but listen, we all know about a man's cold. You handle it differently. And I can understand where you're coming from now as someone who can't take anything and has no immune system.
I like how casually you just dropped that.
Yeah.
I think we've only previously revealed that to the Horse Radio Network auditors before now.
Oh, that's true. It has been a special treat. So for our listeners who aren't auditors, I am pregnant.
Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. I'm going to be a podcast aunt. I'm so excited.
I know. And it's double trouble because it's twins.
I got two arms. I can hold one on each side. It's going to be great.
I can't wait. Now, my horsey financials are going to have to figure themselves out because most likely they will want to get involved in some capacity. I'm going to get savvy there. But
we had so much fun at Equine Affair. Like, first of all, like on Friday, we definitely did a little baby shopping and that was super fun. And then we pranked your husband and sent him pictures of a pony that was there. And we were like, we got this pony for the kids. And he was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. Which was not the reaction we were hoping for.
He really thought we bought that mini horse and he was so excited for it. I was like, this is not how you're supposed to behave as a significant other.
Yeah, he was like too on board. It was very suspicious.
I mean, to be fair, I should have called that one. He has been wanting his own mini horse for years.
That is true. Yeah, he's like on the record on the show talking about that mini horse, right?
Still does.
Yeah.
But
you've really denied him a treat.
I know. He was so heartbroken. He's like, I would have been totally fine with it. I just didn't know how you were going to get it home. It's like, for one, it would have fit in my car, but yeah, it would have been messy.
It would have, yeah. I've put a goat in a Subaru before, in a dog crate.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was very self-contained. Like we put a tarp down and then put the dog crate down and the dog crate had straw in it, but like the goaty smell didn't leave for several months. So I don't recommend it if you like your car, but it's definitely doable.
For safety driving, probably wouldn't have been my decision to make.
They probably would have had an issue with you taking it home that way.
Probably.
I have to imagine that they would not be like, yeah, sure, that's great, you know.
We hope. We certainly hope no one was okay with that. But yeah, it was fun to, you know, spoil the babies to come. And what's even more fun, Kristen, and I'm slightly bummed by it, but they will be born during makeover week.
Whoop, whoop.
So they are makeover babies.
This is fabulous. So I'm going to be checking my phone every 30 seconds for updates. And I think you have sworn that if they're born during makeover week, you will name them after the makeover winning horse. Is that correct?
I mean, I have loosely said that out loud. Yes.
Okay. Do you want to know the names of some of the horses entered before you commit to this?
I think I should.
You might want to.
Husband will be as on board with that as he was the mini.
I mean, there's always Furta, of course, our Make the Makeover horse with Samantha, who we're going to hear more about later.
One
might be really nice. Here are some others that are entered. If you are interested, because jockey club names are always a ride, go to therrp.org/entries, and you can just find this under our makeover menu as well. But Beach Veggies, that's one of my favorites.
Beach Veggies?
Beach Veggies. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's a
thinking of sea cucumbers, but thing? I don't think that's right.
I don't know if that's like a snack you take to the beach. If I'm like really stupid, listeners, please send us a message and correct me if beach veggies is a thing.
You can send us any correction.
Like, I live under a rock. I don't know what any of this means. Get Down Brown. Ooh, Golden Them Hills. That's a good one.
Oh, okay. I mean, Goldie.
That could work. Here Comes Billy. That kind
I might have to say that if I have a William.
Iggy Biggs. Please name
is
your baby
my child
Iggy
going
Biggs.
To be a rapper?
It's just kind of what that sounds like, right?
Their tuitions pay for it if they are successful.
I like it. Misfit Toy. Probably not a good one. You're
probably
gonna get
not. I don't think we're setting up for success there.
Monkey. Just Jockey Club Monkey. Straight up.
You know what? That could be a fun nickname. And after hearing about how Zach was as a child, it is plausible that it could be a nickname for
this
my
true.
Child.
19 oysters.
No.
Maybe no. That's got there's
no, I hope you do well at the makeover 19 oysters, but I don't
best
think
of luck
name
to you.
The child after.
Probably not gonna name the child after that. Yeah. Let's see. Revenge Tour. Ooh, that's a great name. I don't know that that's
honestly
a great kid name, but that's a great horse name.
That's a great horse name for sure. Like maybe. Reggie? I don't know.
Silent Steve. Oh.
Oh.
No.
Why is
Texas Toast? Texas Toast.
I feel like I might get a lawsuit if I name my child Texas Toast.
Oh my God, these names are great. What a great class we have coming in. Here's one jockey club name, Tyrannosaurus Rex. You just call him Rex for short.
I mean, those will be the sounds that my children probably make as they start to learn how to use their voices.
Most likely. And last one, we all have problems. One word.
That one's for me.
Okay, so yes, the short answer here is, banger. You're totally going to name your kids after the makeover winner. Hopefully it's one of those horses
we just
named.
A solid nickname out of this, for sure.
Oh my God, these are amazing. I'm really excited about this class.
I do.
We only have like half the class registered so far, so like God only knows what's coming down the pike here. This is going to be great.
All the options. The suspense will be real, and I hope the listener reaches out to me to remind me of this episode.
Yeah, someone's going to be like, we have the receipts. You recorded it. You're naming your baby after... insert winner here. So
yes,
babies. Yes. Oh, so excited.
Should be fun for sure. Well, I know we're going to be talking a lot of things makeover with Sam. I'm super excited to learn how she assesses a horse who might be a good fit for the makeover and what, you know, discipline might be best fitting for them. But before we dive into that, we're going to hear from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products.
This nutritional minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. One of the most common mistakes seen in feeding programs is the underfeeding of commercial concentrates. Commercial concentrates are textured or pelleted feeds that provide energy, protein, vitamins, and minerals. Some common manufacturers are Triple Crown, Nutrina, Purina. You get the idea. Every commercial feed has a minimum amount you must feed in order to meet a horse's daily vitamin and mineral requirements. For most commercial concentrates, that level is somewhere between 4 to 6 pounds per day. A lot of horses will get too fat consuming feed at that level, so owners and barn managers feed less, and rightly so. It's not healthy for a horse to get too fat. However, if you are feeding less than the recommended minimum amount to your horse, you are not providing your horse with adequate nutrition. Microphase Vitamin and Mineral Supplement from Kentucky Performance Products can solve your problem. Microphase can be added to the diet as needed to fill in the nutritional gaps. Packed with nutrients but low in calories, you can adjust the feeding level of Microphase to meet your horse's requirements. Learn more about Microphase by visiting kppusa.com. Got questions about your feeding program? We can help. Email Karen at questions@kppusa.com or call us at 859-873-2974.
Well, Joy, we have Sam Fawcett back from Meraki Equestrian up in Ontario, our neighbor to the north, north of both of us, actually, which is pretty cool because normally Joy and I are like the northernmost people that we talk to. So welcome, Sam, from the north.
Thanks for having me back.
You guys got snow between like our last recording and today, right? I was looking at some other Ontario friends and it looked awful.
Oh, yeah. We've had some wild weather. Like, we've had days where we had every season in one day where it swung like over 20 degrees, Celsius, in one direction or the other. And it would be like freezing cold in the morning and then like almost 20 degrees in the afternoon and then back to below zero overnight. So it was, we definitely had some wild weather. Didn't make things super easy for getting much consistent riding in, but we've made it work.
Yeah, same. I think I've ridden my horses like the best week I've had so far this spring was like two rides a week. I was like, woo, yeah. We're really cooking along now. Here we go. Glad I'm not doing the makeovers.
Right?
Oh, man. So we're excited to, you know, have this sort of reimagined Make the Makeover format, you know, and just getting to have some in-depth conversations with you this year, you know, because you're a makeover veteran, you're a professional, like, you know, up-and-comer, like, just excited to pick your brain a little bit. So, kind of taking a deep dive into makeover topics. So we wanted to talk to you today about how you like to assess potential in horses, specifically for the makeover, you know, because that is a little bit of a different beast as far as bringing horses along. But, you know, just some tips in general for listeners, too, as they are, you know, maybe looking to get a thoroughbred of their own. And that's a big question to start with. So, you know, let's just start out, like, where do you normally get your horses from?
Well, the last couple of years, I've been working with Long Run Thoroughbred Retirement Society up in Ontario here. It's actually we only have two accredited rehoming facilities in Canada. The other one is out on the West Coast in British Columbia, I believe. So I got involved with that just because I wanted to be able to work with an organization that was local to me. They're only about half an hour away. And obviously, you know, I like the idea of being able to help support organizations that specialize in rehoming and rehabbing horses off the track. So I made some connections there, and the owner for Ferda in particular, I had already got Della on a Princess in September. I pretty much saw a picture of her go up on their Facebook page, messaged them immediately, was like, I like that mare, I want to come see her. And I think I had her home within a week or something like that. And then with Ferda, I knew I was looking for another prospect, and I'd gone there initially looking at a different horse, another gelding. And the farm manager, kind of knowing what type of horse sizes I tend to like, was like, you know, I think you've got to look at this one. And so that was how I ended up getting Ferda. And I've done a little bit of buying them from the States as well, like Canton Comet, I had brought up from Kentucky. She was bred down there, raced down there, and made a nice connection when I purchased her as well and brought her up to Canada. I don't tend to get a lot of horses, to be honest, from up in Ontario specifically much anymore, just because the prices have gone up quite a bit for horses coming off the track. And so for me as a professional, like, I do have to keep in mind that if it's not a horse that I'm planning to keep long term, I do have to be aware of, you know, how much am I biting off right off the bat on the purchase price that's going to take out from profit, potential profit anyways, down the road. We all know how horses go. Right. So yeah, mostly I've just been working with Long Run recently, and that's been a great experience.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, I mean, RRP, we take some of the credit for the rising prices of horses, but that is a double-edged sword, right? Like, we want them to have more value so they end up in, you know, better situations ideally, but yes, that also makes it a lot harder for that resale market, you know, and the professionals to be able to turn a horse around. So that's sort of what we've identified as like our next frontier, you know, to try to figure out how to bring the secondary price up a little bit as well. So
exactly.
So yes, we hear you.
I think it's good though, because I think that if owners and trainers know that they can get a little bit more value out of their horse, they're less likely to just run them the last couple times just because.
Yeah, we've noticed that too. Like average starts are starting to go down for the class. So that's really interesting. Yeah.
I had got one horse, the last horse that I got from Woodbine up here, he had raced two times within 7 days in the last week of racing. Geez. And he was just kind of a mess mentally and physically. And I was like, you know, to get like the last little bit out of a horse probably wasn't the best call. But again, I do see now that people are getting more money for them. They're kind of stopping earlier and saying, you know what, this one's just not cutting it. It's time for it to find a new home while it's, can do so without incurring injury, right?
Right. Yeah, because we've identified that, you know, sort of across the board, like the aftercare organizations and, you know, the organizations like RRP that are sort of advocating, like, that's the single biggest thing you can do to set a horse up for success in a second career is to retire it sound. Because otherwise, it's someone else's burden, you know, to rehabilitate that horse. Or, you know, someone else has to, I mean, not necessarily someone else's burden, but that race owner, then someone is on the hook, right, to bring that horse back. So, yeah. Love that. So, okay, when you, it can be kind of intimidating, right? Because like, you know, you don't necessarily, maybe you do at long run, but like I know with our friends at New Vocations, like you don't get to ride the horse before you take it home. Do you get to ride them at long run or?
At long run, they will do that because they tend to put a few rides at least on their horses to kind of suss out like, is this more of an amateur friendly horse or is this horse going to need to go to somebody who's already got a lot of experience with thoroughbreds? That was kind of the case with Ferda, why she thought that she would be a good fit for me. But funny enough, I actually did not ride either of those mares before I got them. I just said, you know what? I like them. I'll take them.
Nice. So that's like, I mean, you know, clearly that comes from years of being a professional and kind of being able to assess a prospect, you know, watching it move or watching its demeanor. So like, what are you looking for, you know, to kind of gauge if you're going to be a good fit or not?
The first thing I usually do when I get to seeing a horse, whether it's at the racetrack or at long run or at somebody's farm, is I just want to do a go over. So I want to take a look at the horse, you know, how's their posture? How are they standing? Do they look like they're like kind of maybe favoring something? Do they look like they're weak or underdeveloped somewhere? Does that look like it's an easy fix? Are they, you know, in good health, good weight? I kind of check for like back soreness. I'm a certified equine massage therapist as well. I haven't practiced for, since I became a professional trainer, actually, for a while now, but that was a really good knowledge base for me to kind of understand how biomechanically how things need to be working and to be able to kind of see some red flags. Of course, go over their legs, make sure that there's no, obvious signs of heat or recent injuries, check for old injuries. If they're old, are they cold? What were they? Kind of ask the whoever's the agent for the horse at that time, if they have any knowledge about it. And then, yeah, I like to see them move. So at the racetrack, you know, you're really only going to get to see them jog in hand. You're not going to get to see more than that. So you have to have a pretty good eye in order to know what you're looking for. Like, what is a little bit of body soreness because they just raced or they just trained that's going to go away? Or what looks like it might be a bit more of an issue that's going to keep rearing its ugly head as you proceed in training down the road? At long run, it was nice. I was able to see both of those girls kind of free lunge, move around in the arena, which also let me see like when they went in the arena, I was there for the first time both of them went in the arena. So I was kind of watching like, okay, are they going and checking things out? Are they wanting to just kind of hug down near the barn? You know, how do they move out initially? Do they start off a little bit uptight or anxious and then get better? Or do they just act like they've, you know, done this a million times before and it's no big deal? Both of those mares were kind of like, oh yeah, let's go check the place out and see everything. And then from there, it's, if the horse knows how to lunge, I might want to see it lunge and just, again, like, looking for things like how do they carry themselves? Where's their balance right now? What needs to be worked on? And again, like, okay, what maybe looks like a red flag? Like whether if they're free lunging or on a lunge, can they hold the canter? Of course, I'm not expecting an off-track thoroughbred to always hold the canter perfectly on a 20-meter circle right after they come off the track, because that's just not practical. That's not how they're training. That's not how they've been using their bodies. But again, I think that there are certain things where you're like, okay, well, if they're always, you know, cross-firing on one lead versus the other, or they're kind of struggling to pick it up. Again, it's kind of, okay, well, maybe do I need to check something out a little bit further and see if there's an old injury or just, you know, something minor and that's bugging them a little bit, soft tissue, whatever, and kind of go from there. So, yeah, I don't very often get the chance to actually ride the horses. So I go a lot off of just what I'm seeing and right in front of me at that moment.
I think that's so important that you call out the difference of, you know, muscle soreness from working like on the track. Like if you think about doing a heavy workout yourself, how your body's going to feel, you need some time to recover to be back to that 100% again. And then there is, there could be injury or old injuries that are preventing that movement. So to have that eye, and I think even amateurs are like, take some time with their trainers and maybe try to see what they're seeing if they're thinking of competing that.
I find myself at that crossroads all the time as a horse owner, where I'm like, is this a lameness starting or is this like a muscle development coming out of winter? Like, so yeah, like I feel this because I'm constantly like, I'm at this crossroads and I don't know which road I'm going down. So I'll just take you to the vet.
Yeah, I think it's just a very important call out for sure, especially if you don't have the opportunity to ride or vet or see those things. Like, what self-education can you do? What about mindset? Like, how are you picking a horse that could go to the makeover versus a horse that is probably a good project, but maybe that's not the environment for them, or like that pace to retrain isn't going to be appropriate?
I think sometimes you find that out as you go along. I've had a couple horses over the years that I purchased with the intent to take to the makeover. And then kind of once I got them going, it was maybe they're a little bit mentally immature and they're not going to be ready for it. One of the geldings, he was always a little bit tense at home to ride, but you could kind of work him through it after a few minutes and then he'd be okay. And we took him to his first horse show, which was at the Caledon Horse Park. And it's nowhere near the size of Kentucky, but it's still a pretty big venue. Like there's, I don't know off the top of my head how many rings there are, but there's like around 10 rings or more, and they're all kind of close together. And I was walking him down to the furthest ring, of course. So he was getting to see everything. And he had a couple times where he just like stopped at first and like let me know he was a little bit worried. And then we kind of pushed on. And then by the time we got down to the arena where they were also building at the same time, warm-up ring across the little like main road there. And so there was like dump trucks and rollers and everything. And his brain just kind of fell apart a little bit. Like he froze up and his heart, I could feel his heart pounding through the saddle. And I went, I'm just going to hop off and we're just going to stand up here at the ring and let him just kind of take it all in. And it took him about 10 minutes to kind of like take a breath and relax a little bit. And then I said, you know what, let's just like walk him back and we'll come back down later. Like this was a good little first venture type thing. And he got really stressed again on the way back. And then it was like really windy and he started spooking at just a lot of things. And after that, even when he got home, it took him like a couple weeks actually to kind of like come back down to normal. And that was when I was like, you know what, like, I think that this horse needs a bit more time. He was the one that was raced 2 times in the last week before he retired. So he mentally and physically, he really just needed a bit more time. And so, you know, I made that decision and withdrew him from the makeover and found him another home. I did a little bit of postponing with Ferda from last year to this year, just saying, you know what, like final entries are due and I've got 11 rides on her and she's 4 years old. Like this is probably not going to be the best route for her to take. And on the same token, I've also taken horses down where I was like, I have no idea how they're going to be because I took them to one show 2 weeks before we went to the makeover and that was their first experience. And they got down there and they just took everything in stride and were totally fine with everything. So I think it's a little bit tough sometimes to like tell initially how a horse is going to be. I think that you have to listen to them along the road to the makeover. And if you kind of are hitting a spot where it's like, you know, I think that they might just need a little bit more time, or, you know, maybe this just is not going to be for them and we can't postpone it until next year, then just figure out like a new plan. But yeah, definitely it's hard to know right off the bat, like how they're going to be. And because especially if they're at the track, they might seem a lot more wound up than when they get home.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me because, you know, it is, I don't know. Like, I did the makeover was my first thoroughbred, you know, and I just lucked into him. And I was like, oh my gosh, like in retrospect, I had no idea what I was doing. I just really lucked out with a good egg. And now I've like built up so much doubt in my head that I like lightning will never strike twice that I'm like, I could never do it again, first of all, because I work there and that would be the worst week of my life trying to do all the things. But like, I don't know that I would ever get that lucky again, you know, and find that horse, because I don't know that I believe in my ability to find the right one. And there is a fair amount of luck to it, you know, that like, oh, okay, turns out this one can't handle the pressure, you know, and that one could have, and I didn't choose that one, you know? So kudos that, you know, that we always credit makeover trainers with being horsemen first, because generally the majority of them, you know, can tell if they have a horse that's not going to be ready, and they make the horseman's decision and they scratch, or they, you know, come in and understand like, I'm going to blow, you know, my $300 entry fee, and I'm just going to walk into the ring and walk around and walk out, you know? And I love those moments to witness those. And, you know, those are the ones that make me tear up, where I'm like, oh my God, that person knew what that horse needed in that moment, you know, and took that way out. So yeah, it's fascinating.
And that happened to me with Delawana Princess last year. She'd gotten a bit sore the week before the makeover. And, you know, we kind of did some body work, got her to a point where she was like comfortable, sound. And then she got back sore again after the long haul down there. So she got treated by one of the chiropractors that goes around every year there right off the bat, as soon as I got her, you know, unloaded and realized that she was a bit back sore when I was grooming her, and ended up making the decision to withdraw her from competition on the Wednesday in the Hunters. And on Thursday I said, you know, she's feeling pretty good, but I'm not going to do any of the jumping. So I went in to the show jumping ring and I did my flat test, and then I saluted and I let her walk around the whole ring on a loose rein and walk out. And we were lucky enough to get to participate in the clinic on Friday, and she was feeling good enough to jump and back to being herself by then. So, you know, it sucked not being able to compete, especially because she received really good scores on her flat work. But yeah, sometimes you just got to do what's best for the horse.
I love that. You're going to make me tear up now. But, you know, that's why we also, you know, we brief the judges, and our judges are just so open-minded about stuff like that, you know, and they will usually salute you back, you know, if you make that decision, like, well done, you know.
Wait, they were very supportive.
So, yeah. And I'm sure they loved. I was just going to say, I'm sure they loved getting the opportunity to see her again Friday, you know, and be like, ah, yes, here's that horse. So that's great.
Yeah. No, it was great being able to do the clinic. I hope to be able to do that again at some point else in the future.
Yeah, I'm excited. That might have been my idea, but at some point, all the ideas sort of become a groupthink at RRP, so I don't remember whose idea it was. I'm going to take credit here and now, but someone will correct me when they hear this, so it's fine. Yeah. So at what point in, you know, the process, especially for the makeover, do you kind of figure out the direction a horse wants to go? You know, especially if you don't get to ride it at the moment you take that horse home, you know, and you have a few weeks still to kind of like work out body soreness and really establish how a horse moves. And of course, you know, as they build muscle and balance in different places, they might carry themselves really differently, you know, a week or a month down the road. So at what point do you decide like, okay, this horse has potential for show jumping, or this horse is a dressage prospect? Like, how do you make that decision?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, for me, like, flat work is very important in my training program. I spend a lot of time making sure that they've got good basics, and that those basics can translate into jumping. I'm always looking for my prospects to ideally go to show jumping, of course, as my number one, because that's my area of emphasis. But, you know, I wait pretty late, to be honest, to kind of see like, oh, do they maybe want to play in the Hunters? Do they maybe want to go do some dressage? If I had a little bit more bravery, I'd probably pop Furta and eventing, to be honest, but I don't know if I want to go out and play cross country right off the bat. But I usually just kind of wait and see, like, because like you said, they really can change a lot over the course of 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. You know, I've started some horses and you start them out and they've got this like horrendous sewing machine trot. My 2019 prospect was like that. Like, when I first started him, I was like, oh my God, this trot's horrendous. The canter's amazing, just beautiful, easy to ride. But the trot was just really unbalanced. Sometimes, you know, like wanting to go fast, wanting to slow down, like not really able to find like that nice rhythm and cadence and kind of balance. And, you know, there's luckily a fair amount of work that you can do, I believe, to improve a horse's trot. And so taking that time to do certain exercises, like some pole work and whatnot, trying to kind of teach them how to carry themselves a little bit differently. If you had asked me at the beginning when I started Hemi if I was going to do dressage with him, I would have been like, yeah, no. And we ended up doing show jumping and dressage, and his flat work was very impressive at that point. And his trot, you know, even years after the makeover, like just kept developing into like a nicer and nicer trot as the time went on. So yeah, definitely a lot can change in a short amount of time, and a lot can change after the fact too.
I love that you mentioned, you know, like after the makeover, because we always, you know, say in the trainer group, like, oh, the good stuff happens like in years 2 and 3, you know, if you've held on to your horse, like you see some of like the really cool development happen. And it's, I understand why everyone wants a graduate show, because they want to show off how much cooler the horses have gotten. You know, it's not scope that we can handle at the makeover, because we have enough going on with, you know, 300 green horses. So, but I totally get where people are coming from. But I mean, that's the thing with these, I mean, with all horses, but especially with the thoroughbreds, like it's really a long game, you know, like you've got to be able to see the future. And, you know, hats off to you for being able to see the future on these horses. Cause I'm like, I don't know, this one was cute. I took it home. And that's about as far as my assessing of prospects goes. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also am like, wow, I see the difference, you know, in the way my horse went that first year versus how he goes now. And I'd love to bring him back and show him off now, cause he's so much cooler now than he was at the makeover. And he was very cool at the makeover. So
yeah,
love that. Love it. Okay. So if you had to give, you know, your average like adult amateur who's looking to get their first thoroughbred, like kind of a, like all wrapped up in an eggshell, like how to assess a prospect, like what's the single best piece of advice you would give people?
First piece of advice I would give anyone that's not super experienced with it is find somebody who is, for even just a consult, even if you're just going to like send some pictures and tell them about the horse. Because recently, actually, I found over the last 2 years, I've had people reach out to me on a couple different occasions, kind of going, you know, we got this horse home and things are not going well, or it's not what we expected. And sometimes even just taking a quick look at the horse's racing history, it's like, well, they DNF'd on their last race. Like, did you ask about that? Did you do a PPE? You know, like things like that. But I think that when you're going to go look at prospects, like know what you're looking for. If you're looking for an uphill, beautiful moving dressage and jumper, like don't buy something that's built downhill, because no matter how much you train, you're never going to get that type of movement that you really truly want out of a horse that's not built for that job. You know what I mean? Not that you can't improve the flat work on any horse with good basics, but there's definitely, you know, there are horses that are, they're not purpose bred for any specific sport other than racing, most of them, but there are lines that you can look at and go, okay, well, like that line tends to produce a lot of really nice jumpers, like Lemon Drop Kid. I know that there's a horse sired by him that's down competing in WEF in Grand Prix. And I've known of a few other like really good eventers that went up to some high level stuff that were bred by him. And so definitely like knowing a little bit of like their breeding and what they were bred for, I think goes a long way too when you're looking at a prospect. And I think that if you're not really experienced with buying something, you know, on the spot, sight unseen, like try not to fall victim to that pressure where it's like, well, the horses, there's 10 people lined up. Like if you need to do a PPE on it, do the PPE. And if the person's not willing to hold the horse for the PPE, then, you know, as much as you might love it, like maybe there's a reason. Because I do see a lot of inexperienced people in the last couple years that, you know, I love that people are wanting to get involved with the thoroughbreds and everything, but I think that if you are not super experienced with it, you'd be best to kind of just find somebody that can walk you through a little bit, or just like show you some red flags if things come up, so that you don't have to find out the hard way like we did.
Yeah, love that. That's super. So okay, now we've talked a lot about finding prospects, but I don't want to forget about Ferda. What has Ferda been up to since we last spoke about a month ago?
You know, I will be honest that the last 2 weeks, between weather and I had staff on vacation, and I came off one of my other horses that spooked at nothing because she was in heat and her brain was just, it was Canton Comet. It was hairy. I've never come off of her, and she just was not thinking that day. And like, she can spin like a quarter horse, and she just like spooked at nothing and was out from under me before I could blink an eye.
Oops.
So Ferda got a little bit of a light, like under saddle work over the last couple weeks, but I'm still quite consistent with her on doing groundwork, even if that's, whether that's lunging or just, you know, grooming her and taking her in hand and just moving her around and, you know, walking over poles, doing stuff like that, because she does have like, she doesn't have any like major physical issues, but she is, the way she's built, she's like a big long mare. So it's hard for her to kind of get her back end underneath her. So I want to do as much as I can to help her strengthen her back end. So, you know, if I couldn't ride and I didn't think she needed a lunge that day, like sometimes I set up just some raised walking poles and went and worked her over that, or worked her laterally over a single pole, so that she just kind of starts to get a little bit more comfortable in her body, even if I can't be riding her. And I hopped on her today. It was a beautiful day today. We were like sunny, 18 degrees Celsius. I'm not sure what that converts to in Fahrenheit, but I was like, you know what? I know she hasn't ridden for like over a week now, but she seems like she's in a good mood. I'm going to hop on without a lunge. And I had a fantastic ride. And I was even saying to my friend that was my groom that was taking some video for me, and I just said, you know, like, I haven't ridden her, but she feels so much better than the last time I rode her, like just a little bit more unlocked through a rib cage, moving a little bit better, breathing, you know, not being so tense and anxious. And so, like you were saying, you know, when you kind of said about, haven't ridden much lately, thank God I'm not going to the makeover. I think even if you can't ride, there's stuff you can still do that can like better each individual horse, you know?
Yes, absolutely. I love that, you know, that's such a testament to that. We used to do a webinar and we haven't done it in a couple of years. And now we're kind of past, like, hopefully, my fingers are crossed. Hopefully we're past that point in the spring where the weather's real up and down. But we did it. Dr. Reed and I did this for a couple of years. It was how to train when you can't ride. And it was focusing on all that like little groundwork stuff and all the little bits you can do. And that stuff really does add up. You know, if you figure, like the way I always tell myself is, they prep yearlings for the sale just by hand walking them, and they look amazing. So yeah. Like, if that doesn't tell you what just some good, thoughtful, you know, like thoughtfully approaching your hand walking can do, like, I don't know what will convince people. But yeah, I love hearing
absolutely.
That. That's awesome.
Good point.
Now, were you looking at another horse at the end of last episode?
I am. It looks like he's got some, a little injury that came up, while he's at long run. So he's going to do a little bit more rehabbing. So I'm hoping to get him for, next year. That would be great for 2026, but, I'm still on the hunt right now for my second prospect, even though we're, I guess, what are we, a little over 6 months away?
It feels far still from here, you know, like it still feels very doable of like, you know, like, especially in light, I mean, you guys certainly get worse weather than we do, but like we're fairly similar, you know, and I wouldn't even be starting serious conditioning until a couple weeks from now anyway. So yeah, now I sit here like with the confidence of someone who literally just said, I will never do the makeover again because I can't. Like, I'm like, I would do the makeover. I would start it in May. It's fine. So like, I'm still with you. You've got time. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And I mean, in regards to that, I mean, definitely the second prospect that I'm looking for, I'm going to be looking for something that hopefully like is not going to need a lot of downtime, because I'm not going to really have a large amount of time to be like, well, you know what, you can sit for a few months and let everything kind of like relax and whatnot. So I'll definitely be looking for something that's, you know, maybe a little bit lighter trained or holding up really well to training. That'll definitely be at the forefront of my mind, is physically, is this horse going to be able to handle the training? Because it definitely will be a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit more intense when it's a shorter period of time. And you know that like, you still want to take little bites, but you know that you kind of have to take frequent little bites to get to where you want. So that'll kind of be first and foremost in what I'm looking for. And, I'd also like to find something that, you know, maybe is a little bit more amateur friendly, because it definitely makes it a little bit easier when you get to the makeover or you get to any horse shows that you're taking them to or off property excursions. If one horse is going to be a little bit up, it's nice if the other one maybe can keep it a little bit more mellow.
Yes.
And I know Ferda is a little bit of a hot tamale. So, you know, I know I'll have my hands full with that one. If I could find another one that's like a little easier going, maybe wants to be like a nice, like a Western pleasure type, that would be good.
Yeah, a soothing presence. I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Sam, remind us, remind listeners where they can follow along on the journey for you.
So I'm on, my social media is Meraki Equestrian, and I'm on TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram.
Lovely. All right. Well, we will look forward to seeing more updates on FURTA in the coming weeks, and we will catch up with you again soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Cashel has been crafting top-notch products since 1986, designed to make your ride safer, more convenient, and downright enjoyable. From the Crusader Fly Mask, the ultimate fly mask, trusted by riders nationwide, to the Blanket Top Performance Felt Pad with pressed felt with merino fleece. It's like a spa day for your horse's back. To the beautiful beaded halters, adjustable, durable, and gorgeous. Visit CashelCompany.com today and gear up for the ride of a lifetime. Cashel, where quality meets the saddle.
Did you know as a member of the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, you qualify for discounts through Equine Discounts? Equine Discounts provides exclusive discounts on nationally known products for everyone in the horse world. Current partners include John Deere, Big Ass Fans, Sherwin-Williams, ODP Business Solutions, Farmers Insurance, and Pets Best. They offer equine members steep discounts on everything from paint, fans, office supplies, and pet insurance to farm equipment, such as tractors, mowers, hay equipment, and gators. Anyone with a paid membership to any equine association, such as the National Thoroughbred Racing Association, qualifies for equine discounts. Whether you're a member of the National Association or a local equine affiliate, you qualify by being a member of the equine world. A percentage of every sale through equine discounts is returned to the equine industry. Call 866-678-4289 to see how, as an Equine Association member, you can save money while helping support the industry at the same time.
Well, Joy, at the end of April, we saw the Defender Kentucky three-day event take place at the Kentucky Horse Park. And, you know, we followed that because there's really not a lot of events like it to see thoroughbreds at, like, you know, the pinnacle of sport. So, you know, you'll find a fair amount of Grand Prix level competitions and show jumping and dressage. And then, you know, when you get over to Hunterland, there's a fairly complicated leveling system and classes that I still don't understand, despite sort of following along with that sport for years. And then over on the Western side, we have so many different associations and disciplines that you really don't have that kind of same environment as exists in eventing, where you're seeing all the best in the world all gathered together. There's only a handful of five stars all around the world. And, you know, there's only two in the US. So at RRP, you know, we follow the thoroughbred entrance, especially at Kentucky, because it is a great opportunity to celebrate the breed up at the highest levels of sport. So, you know, we kept track of those 16 thoroughbreds between the five star and the four star, you know, and kind of followed them along throughout the week. We started out with four thoroughbred entrants in the five star, and two of them did complete the whole event. It is not uncommon at that highest level of eventing for horses to just simply not finish. It's not that anything like terrible happens to them. It's just that it's a really strenuous sport. So a lot of times riders make the decision to retire or pull horses out. So we started out with four. Two of them did complete. Unfortunately, Twilight's last Gleam was eliminated at the first horse inspection, and then HSH double 16 ended up retiring on cross country. It was a little bit damp that day, so I think a lot of riders were choosing to retire or withdraw before that even started. But the ones that did finish, Soro Kema with Buck Davidson finished in 13th overall. An artist who's a New Zealand bred who, you know, never registered to race, he finished 8th with Monica Spencer. So that was overall the highest place thoroughbred out of both levels. Down in the four star, we started out with 12 thoroughbreds. Two of them ended up withdrawing before the order of go was drawn, which is also not uncommon. So that was Charmed Victory and High Tide. There was a little bit of an older guy named Wizard with Sally Cousins, and he ended up withdrawing after dressage. A few horses retired on cross country, including Menlo Park and Vincent Chase. And then a couple of others had some bad luck and unfortunately lost their riders, which is an elimination. And that included Dunedin Black Watch, who came up from Australia, as well as Sea of Clouds. Five horses did make it all the way through. So working our way up from the bottom, Little Hale placed 29th, Argyle placed 26th, Malibu Preacher placed 25th, Venezuelan River placed 22nd, and Beautiful Storm was the highest in the four-star at 10th place with Jan Benny. Congratulations to all.
Recharge your training program with Equestrian Plus. Equestrian Plus brings together the top riders, trainers, and professionals onto one video platform. Watch over 5,000 how-to training videos, clinic and event footage, exclusive training sessions, and more, featuring top experts including 5-time dressage Olympian Stefan Peters, international Grand Prix dressage competitor Anna Baffini, Olympic dressage team bronze medalist Laura Graves, and many more. Join Equestrian Plus now and use promo code HRN15 for 15% off your first month. Visit equestrianplus.com to subscribe.
Well, it's that time of the episode where we bring on new vocations to share all the good things that are happening in their world. And today we have Amanda Tucker from the Lexington facility. Welcome back, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
I feel like you guys had a very, very busy month in April, and I cannot wait to hear about it. I know we normally go into a training tip, but I would love to hear how Defender Weekend was for the Lexington facility at New Vocations.
Yeah, absolutely. What a whirlwind week that was. I think I'm still recovering, but it's my favorite week, and we kick it all off with our open barn and barbecue on this Thursday evening. And we got really lucky with the weather. We thought we were going to get rained out, and we didn't. And we had about 500 to 600 people pass through the barns.
Wow.
So it was
amazing.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we had like 6 food trucks. We had a keynote speaker and another demo, and we ended up adopting almost 15 horses out from that event alone. So it was a lot of fun. We have a live band as well and a silent auction. So it was a great party here.
That's amazing. And just to get those numbers, I feel like, you know, we're all still kind of recovering from the business loss of COVID, like where everything had to be like small groups at most. And I know it's been a few years since, but it just feels so nostalgic to hear like that size population was coming through. How were your adoptions for that weekend?
Yeah. So we had so many people in person come and meet the horses, which is great. Because a lot of the adoptions here, at least, are mostly done from online videos. So it was so great to have people in the barn, people who'd never even heard of us before were coming through and filling out applications right then and there. And then in the last week, we've had 15 horses depart that were met on that night. So yeah.
That's a huge win. That's a huge win for you all.
Yes.
So tell, for listeners who don't know about the barbecue, I know it's past. Tell us a little bit about what that event is and what New Vocations tries to do during the weekend.
Yeah, so it's a really fun kickoff for Land Rover. So we do it the Thursday evening here. So if you want to go out to Land Rover, you can come over in the evening. We have food trucks, live music, and then we have a couple demos. This year we had Sarah Shade. She talked about when is an off-the-track thoroughbred suitable for a younger rider. And then we also had Maxine Preston that did the do's and don'ts of starting young thoroughbreds over fences. So we do both of those. And then in between those, we have the silent auction outside. And then you can wander through the barns and see all the horses and find out all that information on who's adoptable and talk to the barn staff to get to really know the horses.
Oh, such a good experience. And especially for people who may not have heard of New Vocations, like a friendly way to see everything you're doing. And for anyone who has not been to your Lexington facility, it is stunning. Like just the drive up, it just like the first time I ever went, I was like, oh my gosh, I would work here. I'd live here. Like, where do I sign up? It is a beautiful facility. The horses are so well kept, and it just makes you feel really good bringing a horse home from you all.
Yeah, we are so lucky to be. It's such a beautiful facility, especially this time of year when everything's turning green now. I just love being out here, and it's really fun for people to come out and see it in person.
Fabulous. And I'm sure everyone was very excited for Defender Weekend. I think it was a great competition. It was fun to see how many people from our listener base went out for it. I know Glenn and Jamie from Horses in the Morning were there too to do some coverage. Does New Vocations typically have a booth there as well?
Yes, we do. We're always kind of at the front of the indoor arena. We're up in that corner there. And so it's a great way to meet more people. And the number of New Vocations bags that I saw out on the cross country course on Saturday was phenomenal.
Oh, definitely a victory there. Before we move on to our adoptable horse, I do want to know how your makeover horse is going too, because
it's not just about, you know, people adopting horses from new vocations. Like, you have your own horse that you're bringing to the makeover and bringing along. How is that going?
So he's doing amazing. I adopted him in the winter, and he's actually a warhorse. So he's kind of been there, done that. So he was actually a mounted steward horse with me at Defender for the 4-star. So we were out on the cross country course, which was amazing.
What a great experience.
Yeah. So I wasn't, you know, I was a little hesitant of the, you know, maybe it wouldn't go well, but he's been so solid, and he did both of the demos here on Thursday, and we've gone out to a couple little shows. So we went out there with, you know, no expectations, and he just took it in his stride and was out amongst the crowds and the loudspeakers and the jumbotrons. And he just hung out with me for, I think I was in the saddle for 5 hours.
Wow.
So yeah, he's horse park ready.
What a good brain on that horse. Cause I can tell you, the first time my thoroughbred saw any smidge of cross country, we're not eventers. It was a dressage show, and there were people cross country schooling on the same property. We were about to go in the ring, and she saw one of the horses, you know, galloping to the next fence, and they were a distance away. I felt her heart racing through my saddle. I was like, this is how I die. This is how I die, is because of cross country. So not every horse is capable to take that level of intensity. And especially you add in Defender weekend, like, you have the crowds, you have the dogs, you have strollers, you have all of these stimuli around you. He's definitely ready for the makeover, at least mentally.
He's going to do so great. I picked him out for his brain because I'm actually going to do a team with my 12-year-old daughter. So she's going to ride him too. So we picked him out for his really good brain.
I love that. I can't wait to hear more, especially and see all the pictures. So I'm going to continue to follow your journey for sure. And then I think, well, listeners now know that I'm expecting, and I'm likely going to be giving birth during makeover week. So I won't actually be there this year, which is heartbreaking, but I will make Kristen stalk you so I can get some footage and see how it went.
We cannot wait.
Amazing. Well, let's get into our adoptable horse. We've hyped everyone up about the Lexington facility and the horses you have. Who do we have today?
So our adoptable horse this week is called Coinvest, or some of our barn staff call him Coinvest, depending on how you read his name. And he is actually a rehab adoption. So he is coming back from just a minor suspensory injury. So he just needs a little bit more downtime, which is really good, because then you get to build a relationship with him before you start doing too much. So I really love the rehab adoptions because they have such a great bond with their adopter.
I agree. He's super, super cute. And he's just that classic bay. He's got a little bit of chrome on him too, to make him stand out, but great height at 16 hands. So good size for just about anybody. I feel like Kristen would actually really like him because of his build. I think he's going to fill out really nicely once he's back into work. But
yes, he's definitely her type, and he has the best personality. I have never met a sweeter horse than this guy.
Oh, I love it. And I do agree, like, the rehab horses offer such a unique experience where you don't feel that pressure to just start work and, you know, hitting milestones. And while some people really love that, I think there's a lot of, you know, adult AMIs, a lot of trainers who want that time to build a solid relationship from the ground. And helping them kind of come along and build that safety along the way, it's just going to make when you get to riding so much smoother.
Exactly. It takes all the rush out of it, and you can just enjoy a horse and get to know them, and they can get to know you and really build that relationship. So I really enjoy the rehab adoptions.
I love it. Well, he's going to be a quick one to go. He's super quick. Super cute, I can tell. And he's just got that nice build overall. I could see him going Western or English pretty easily, and can't wait to see where his career takes him. And his adoption fee is only $1,500. So if you're looking for a horse, make sure you get your applications in. Horseadoption.com is where you want to go. And then if this is not the right horse for you, or he's already been adopted, make sure you reach out to Amanda, because she will help you find the right fit for you. Amanda, thank you so much for your time today. It is always a treat.
Absolutely.
You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Retired Racehorse Radio.
Follow the network on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram and Threads at The Horseback Writer. My email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com.
You can find me on Instagram at MissFitMare, and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, National Thoroughbred Racing Association Equine Discounts, and Equestrian Plus, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, at horseradionetwork.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show as it helps us grow. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride.
And cow side leg.
Bye, guys.